Thank you very much.
Start to try me a whole person.
Eva Insurance.
His name's Tom.
Very much, Eamon. Our political correspondent, Sean Defoe, has a regular podcast called Let Me Explain, in which he'll drill down into the various questions that intrigue him and us. Now, it could be about politics, about how our system works, or the effects of a nuclear bomb exploding over Ireland. Well, in fact, Sean had his own personal nuclear detonation recently, and in the latest edition of his podcast, Let Me Explain, he literally has to explain himself. And he joins me now. That podcast will be dropping later today. Sean, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Pat. Good to be back in with you.
It's good to see you after so long. Because you went missing and you didn't kind of broadcast, if you like, the reasons why you were missing. You quietly went missing.
Yeah, sort of shuffled off. And it's a funny one, for both for people working here, but just in general, because it was it was October 6th last year. It was the night of the IMRO Radio Awards, which are like the Oscars of radio. And it was the week before the budget. And, you know, nothing really seemed to miss. I went along to the awards and I sort of snuck out early and haven't seen most of my colleagues since. And the reason I did that was because that morning I had been told that I had cancer. That I had testicular cancer.
Yeah. Now, this was the culmination of a series of events where you had some symptoms and you were trying to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, exactly. So I turned 30 last June, and I can't remember exactly when. It was a couple of weeks after that I sort of noticed a bit of a pain in one of my testicles, but it went away after a couple of days. I just thought maybe I knocked myself had hit off something. Didn't think too much about it. And then towards the end of August, it came back, and this time it didn't go away. And it was starting to nag at me then. I was examining them, but I couldn't feel any lump or anything. I wasn't really sure what it was.
I bet you, being a journalist, you went to Dr. Google.
I went to Dr. Google, yeah. I looked at Dr. Google, and of course Dr. Google was telling me the worst, telling me, oh, this is cancer, you're in trouble here. But like most men, like a lot of men in Ireland, I was completely in denial about that. I was like, oh, it's not, it couldn't possibly be, it'll never be me that gets something like that. So I was putting it off getting it looked at. And actually, we were out for a walk one day with the dog, and he was kind of walking on the lead, and he just suddenly pulled very sharply to the left and clipped me with the lead, if you like.
Yeah.
And the pain was extraordinary. The pain was one of the worst I've ever had, and I had to basically limp home. And that was the point. I said, right, I can't ignore this any longer. I'll go to the doctor. The doctor thought, did the examination and said they thought it was a thing called epididymitis, which is basically an infection. It's inflammation at the back of the testicle.
So reassurance straight away.
Exactly. I thought, oh, great, there is something else this could be, because in my mind it was just going, oh, cancer, cancer, cancer. So I thought, oh, fine, great. So she booked me in for a scan just to be safe and gave me an antibiotic, took the antibiotic, and that completely took the pain away. I had very, very little pain. Again, still couldn't feel any real lump or anything. So I was totally reassured when, went off to New York for work. I was doing reports into you from there, into the show, and wouldn't have noticed any other symptom. I was a bit more tired in hindsight than usual, but that's the only thing. Went to the scan anyway, to the ultrasound, and I was sitting there, told my fiance not to come with me that morning, said it'll be grand, I'll meet you later on, and went on my own. Wasn't really thinking it would be anything. And then at the end of the scan, the lady turned to me and she said, well, it's not epididymitis. There is a solid lump there.
Okay.
And that was sort of, I describe it in the podcast, that that moment in the movies where the main character has something happened to them and the head goes spinning and the camera's tilting and all this, and you think that's just a movie effect, but that's exactly how it felt. I went completely dizzy, had to sit down, was just not taking anything in that's going around. And really it was this flip that, right, from this point your life is never quite the same again.
Okay, now you get the diagnosis. You still go to the IMROs.
Yeah, well, I decided, so that was the GP. The week later then I met the urologist. That was the morning of the IMROs, who gave the formal diagnosis, said, yes, this is cancer. Yes, we're going to have to act really quickly here because testicular cancer is quite a fast moving form and we're going to have to book you in for surgery and get this all underway. I still went on that night because I was like, look, it's a good night. I want to have one more night of normality with my colleagues. But sort of looking around, I was kind of going, this is it for a while. I might not be here. But at the same time, if it was only going to be the surgery, it doesn't knock you out for that long. 56 to 60% of testicular cancer cases are solved with surgery.
The urologist, had they outlined exactly what the treatment was going to be? Like, first step was going to be surgery?
First step was surgery, yeah. That's exactly. There is no, with testicular cancer, because of the way it is, there's not really much point in doing a biopsy or anything like that. They just remove the testicle. That's what they do. It's called an orchidectomy. And so that was first step. It was, we are going to get you in the next week or two for surgery. And another part of that first step is sperm banking. They advise anyone going into testicular cancer counterintuitive.
Now, for many people, sperm production resumes, but just in case.
Exactly. So for the vast majority of people, the other testicle basically makes up for it, both with testosterone and in terms of sperm production. But they do advise it because when you go through chemotherapy, that can have an effect on fertility. So they advise you to do it. And actually, it's a free service for men who have testicular cancer. They'll store it for free for 10 years.
Now, you'd be asking, why me? But it turns out that you would have been in the cohort that is most susceptible to testicular cancer,
which
the
is something
age cohort.
I had no idea about, absolutely no idea that I was at the risk. But it is, it's sort of, you know, 20 to 44 year olds are the ones most at risk, and I'm kind of slap bang in the middle of that at age 30. But you do go through it, and it's something that unfortunately you never really get an answer on. Why did I get this cancer? And for a lot of people, not just testicular cancer, they never really get that answer. You could maybe understand it if you were smoking 40 a day and you get lung cancer or whatever. But, you know, I had a pretty good diet, didn't drink much, decent weight and exercise and all that sort of stuff. But with testicular cancer, unfortunately, there's a couple of risk factors. One is if someone in your family has had it. One is if you've had an undescended testicle. But generally, it just kind of happens sometimes, and that seems to be the case with me.
Now, you were alerted to this by pain, but not everyone has pain.
No, not everyone does. About 50% of the cases will. So I was lucky. We caught it early because I had the pain. But because most men don't examine themselves, if you didn't, you might know about it for a while. Now, what the other symptoms that tend to be there is that it's harder, one testicle is harder than the other one, and then obviously that there is a bit of a growth, or that it gets bigger, and that you feel that and then go and get it examined. But sometimes they can be quite subtle. I mean, mine went from being a little bit harder than the other one to being a full-blown lump and a tumour in the space of a few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it was very quick.
So what happens then? You go in for surgery, you haven't been to the sperm bank, you go in for surgery. And when did you know you were going to have to do more?
It was a few days after that. And in truth, we kind of suspected. So I had a surgery on a Thursday morning. It's a very quick surgery. It's only about 15 minutes. And, you know, you wake up feeling lovely from the drugs that put you under and all that sort of stuff. And there's a bit of pain afterwards. You're kind of walking and sitting a bit awkwardly for a while, but it's not too bad. The same morning, I had a CT scan. And that was to check whether or not it had spread. And we were told they'd have those results in 24 hours. We didn't get them on the Friday, and then thought, oh, maybe we'll get them on the Monday. And then when they hadn't rang on the Monday or the Tuesday, we kind of suspected something was up. And what they were waiting for was the histology, the examination of the tumour, to come back to tell us everything. And at that stage, they knew what kind of cancer it was, quite a fast moving one. And they also knew that it had moved into my abdomen, into a para-aortic node, a lymph node, which is traditionally the next stop for testicular cancer. It's the next stop along the path, if you like.
So then they decide it's systemic now. They've got to get into your system.
Yeah.
And that's where the chemo comes in.
That's where the chemo comes in, yeah. And that was the moment of shock, I suppose, for me. Was I wasn't afraid of the surgery, and I don't even think I was afraid of the cancer at that stage. I don't think it had set in that this is what it was. It was still all a bit surreal, but I was afraid of chemo. I mean, you know, you hear all the stories, you see people who've been through it. It's not a nice thing to go through. With testicular cancer, there's a very set regime, and that regime really hasn't changed in more than 30 years. It's three drugs. BEP is what it's called. They're very hard on the system, but they have a huge cure rate, a 95% cure rate. So that was what we were told. We met with the oncologist, and he said, you're going to have to go through this. It's going to be 9 weeks, so it's not a huge amount of time, three cycles over that. But the cycles are hard. Three cycles of 3 weeks. The first week, you have 5 days straight of chemo, pretty much 9 to 5. Through those days, you spend that in hospital so that they can keep an eye on you and see if anything goes wrong or you have any complications with it. And then you've another 1 day of chemo each of the subsequent weeks.
All right. Now, nausea?
Nausea, this is one thing I found, because I had the image in my head of I was going to be getting 6, 7, 8 times a day over the toilet bowl. You know, maybe that old-fashioned image of chemotherapy. That's changed really quite a lot, and the anti-nausea medicines are great. I didn't get sick at any point. Now, you felt nauseous. You didn't feel good at any point. I kind of describe it as, even when you've taken those drugs, you feel like you have a bad hangover for 10, 11 weeks straight. But they are very good at stopping you from getting sick now with those drugs. So thankfully that was one of the side effects. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
The other thing that you probably were thinking about, you have a fine head of hair. You had then, you have now. Did you lose it?
I did. It was about 4 weeks in. It was the start of the second cycle when it started to come out. It was the strangest thing. It was one morning, there was a few hairs on the pillow. And then the next day I was in the shower and put a bit of shampoo on and ran the hand through, and half of my hair was on my hand, you know, very strange. It was gone then within a couple of days. The only good news about it is if I ever go bald naturally, I know my skull shape isn't terrible. You know, it doesn't look too bad.
I mentioned Dr. Google earlier. I mean, did you start researching your own condition?
Yes, I did, and my fiance Jill did. She's also a journalist, so we both had that nose for we need to know everything about this. So straight away, like the first thing I Googled actually was the day that I got the ultrasound done. Was I still went from that dizzy, didn't know what was going on, and I sat in the waiting room and I Googled survival rates. That was my first thought. Is like, oh my god, like
bottom line,
yeah. Am I gonna? Could this threaten my life? And thankfully, the treatment now is very, very successful, so that wasn't ever in danger. But after that, between Jill, who could qualify for a medical degree at this stage, and myself, we had everything researched: the most likely paths, what the common treatment is, what happens if there's complications, what happens if it doesn't get it. We had looked up the resumes of every doctor who was treating us. I read Lance Armstrong's book because he had a very similar testicular cancer to mine. You know, we really got in deep, and that gave us, I suppose, a level of reassurance that, yeah, this wasn't going to be fun. But
and you have
we'll
to know
there.
About, you know, you might get a global survival rate, but you need to know the Irish survival rate.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's funny, the Irish survival rate is pretty similar to the global one because the treatment that they use
is standard protocol.
Standard, yeah. And it's a weird one. It has, like I say, it hasn't really changed in 30 years because it's so successful, and any little deviation, even in trials they've had, have been, even if it's 1 or 2% less successful, that's a big drop, you know. So they haven't changed it much.
So then what about the spread? Was that arrested?
It was. So what happened was, by the, and to show how fast it was moving, I had that CT scan was on, I think, the 19th of October. I had another one 3 weeks later before we started the chemotherapy, and where there was one tumour, there was already a second, and the initial tumour was quite a bit bigger. So we knew going in that was what we had to get rid of. Thankfully, it did. And by the time we had the first scan afterwards, there were two tiny little dots where the tumours had been, but they subsided themselves. I had another scan then, and they showed that cancer was all gone, thankfully, out of my abdomen, but showed up something. I'm starting to learn that all clear is not a term that you get very often.
Yeah.
There was something, a nodule in the lung that we think is just related to an infection. And I actually have another scan tomorrow that's going to just check that out. So we're all good.
So going forward, you'll be checked every how often?
So every, you finish your cancer, you have a cancer treatment, you have a scan then, you have another one after 3 months. That's to make sure it has stayed gone, if it is gone. And then after that, so if tomorrow's one is good news, it'll move to 6 months, every 6 months for a couple of years. And then after that, it'll be yearly until 5 years has gone by. And that's when they tend to think, you know, you're okay.
You're very matter of fact about this. It's a real journalistic approach to your own condition, as if you were somebody else and you're looking at somebody else going through all of this. But what about your own sense of your own mortality all of a sudden at the age of 30?
I know it's weird. It's weird to think about, because we're young men, we're indestructible. We don't go to the doctor. We're fine. You have something wrong, jog it off, kind of an attitude, you know. So when you then get absolutely floored by something, and when you hear the word cancer, like, it's terrifying. I don't care what age you're at. And I met people who were in their 60s and 70s and 80s who were equally shocked that they did a diagnosis in the hospital. So you get thinking about it and you think, look, I just have to look after myself a little bit more. Not that I wasn't terribly beforehand, but really, really pay attention to these things, and that life is precious. You can be cock of the walk 1 minute and then you're in an awful hoop the other. So it does make you think.
And does it give you perspectives on your job, for instance, and, you know, the way we to and fro with the politicians and what they do, and this crisis and the next crisis, and the biggest crisis is your own mortality.
100%. One, your health is your wealth, as they say, and when that comes into question, you do, even following some of the news, and there was a while that I just totally checked out of it when I was really feeling terrible, but even following it from afar, there were some days I was looking, going, I would have been in the middle of that and probably asking those same questions, and I'm going, that's not important. That's really not important, you know? And certainly, it'll change how I cover things in the future, I think, particularly when it comes to healthcare and some of the stuff that's going on in the system, stuff that I've seen while I've been in the hospital. It just does completely change your mindset and the way that you approach it. There'll always be a pre-cancer me and a post-cancer me, I suppose, is the way to put it.
And how do you regard our health system now that you've been through it?
Well, luckily, I was in the private system for most of it, so I got quite good care. But even in the private system, you could see, there were days when I had finished a day of chemo and I was still waiting on a bed for a few hours. You know, now only for a few hours, not nearly what some people are waiting on, not nearly like some people in the public system who are waiting quite a while. But particularly when it comes to cancer, it's just unacceptable to have some of the wait times, or the fact that people in the public system don't have access to the same drugs as people in the private system do. Because when you're going through something like that, your urge is to push to the front. I need to be looked after. I need to be taken care of. And this is my life that's in my hands. And you can lose track of that when you're just covering something slightly dispassionately, as we often do. So when you've been in it, I think it just does bring you that different perspective, and that some of the stuff that's happening in the health services just is
now you're going through this and you're trying to be as positive as you can. But you're in it and you're doing the fighting. But for those around you, your family, your fiance Jill, I mean, they're looking at you and they it's up to you, basically, isn't it?
That was the worst bit, was having to tell them. Like when I had to make the, as I said, I went to scan on my own and Jill had asked, she said, I'll come with you. I said, no, don't bother. It's grand. And having to call her on the way back was just this pit of, it kind of went, once I knew I was likely to survive it, that there was that survivor rate, my mind straight away went there. And calling my mom as well the same day, you know, I called her and she knew straight away something was wrong. She was like, you know, cut the chit chat. What's wrong? You don't ring me at this time of day ever. That was horrendous. And I suppose the guilt you feel as a patient putting that on them as well, it's not nice. You feel for them almost more than you feel for yourself, because in a way I'm like, well, I can fight this. I can feel it every day and I can go through it, but you hate what it puts them through.
Yeah. Now, you obviously owe a debt of gratitude to the nurses and the doctors, the healthcare system, to Jill, to your mum, all the people who supported you. But Sammy, you better tell us about Sammy.
Sammy, our Cocker Spaniel, who not only made me go to the GP by pulling that lead too hard and clipping me, but who also sat by me through hours and hours of Netflix and various other things as I was just vegetating from the various chemo. So he does all that. Though I suspect he rather enjoyed the extra company. I don't know what he's going to do now that I'm returning to work. Yeah. But as you say, look, the nurses in the Beacon in particular, Ray McDermott, the consultant in Deirdre and his team, the nurses really lead it because they're the people you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And in the day unit, they were extraordinary dealing with... It was a strange one being in there because I was the youngest by 20 years most days and I was probably the wellest, if you like. Like there was other people who were older who were having a much more difficult time. And that's a strange thing to go through as well, where they're looking at you with sympathy because they're like, God, you're only 30 and you're here. And I'm looking at them with sympathy going, well, you have a much more difficult fight than I have. So a big thanks to the nurses who look after all of them, particularly to my mother who had to deal with everything that was going on, as well as having a child, having cancer, which is incredibly difficult. And then Jill was did everything. She was working remotely from the canteen in the Beacon some days just so she could be close by in case it was needed. Looked after me with meals, with plans, with looking up what's anti-cancer to get it into you. These awful tasting ginger and turmeric shots that she did at one point, but which were very effective. So, you know, yeah, I owe a huge amount to her.
Were you a good patient?
I was, I think, at the start and much less so as it went on, where I just, by the time you got to cycle 3 in particular, you were so tired and feeling so bad that everything, you were just grumpy, you know, and everything was like, do you have to do this? Do you have to? But I largely would like to think I was a good patient.
Well, Sean, it's great to have you back and long life and problem-free health for the rest of your career here. It's kind of dismaying to see you here.
In what way?
Yeah. No, it's just when I look at you and I see how well you look and just to think back what you've been through.
Yeah.
It's you're remarkable. Thank you very much for sharing it with us.
Thanks very much, Pat. And thank you. Good to be back.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.